ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, fans of all ages, it's your favorite time of the week. You might need to brace yourself and grab a cold beverage. Mark and Scott are ready to drop some college football betting knowledge on your ass. The boys are back and ready to help you find some angles to beat your book, impress your friends, and get you ready to enjoy the greatest sport on the planet. So sit back and enjoy, because we're damn happy to have you. Welcome to the Crazy Sheet.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. This is the Crazy Sheet. I'm Mark, and I'm here sitting in my backyard, otherwise known as the Crazy Sheet Podcasting Studio. And goodness gracious, you know where Scotty is tonight? He's in his backyard. Welcome home, Scotty. How the hell are you?
Thanks, man. Glad to be home from market. Sitting out here by the fire on the backyard. See if I can piss out some neighbors. You know, get to talking gambling. I'm sure somebody's out walking the dog. They'll find somebody on something to get offended about. But, man, glad to be home. Fun week last week. I made enough money betting against Mississippi State that regardless of what happens, it's going to take me a couple of weeks to get back underwater. I mean, it was, if you did not bet the breaks off that first half line, and Mississippi State actually came out decent.
Alabama did not play that great.
Bama's terrible. They were sleepwalking.
They were terrible. You're right, though. I had bet that game in the first quarter. I bet the first half. I bet the game total and left it alone and went to sleep, just like you told me to. I didn't even watch the game, to be honest with you. I was at a concert.
You didn't miss much.
No, but I would tell you this much. I went back and watched it on Monday, and I can tell you that I do not know who's going to win the national championship. If you take Bama, you take Georgia, you take Clemson, you take Ohio State, you take Michigan, take TCU, whoever else is undefeated, put them in a salad bowl, bro, because – I don't know who's going to win it, because I have not seen a team yet that every time they step on the field, it is pure domination in a sense that they look like they are clear front. And Tennessee as well. I have not seen a team yet. I mean, Tennessee's got the most impressive record thus far, but I haven't seen anybody that I think that's going to win the Natty right there.
They could be 4-3 just as easy as they're undefeated. I mean, they're 3 or 4 plays from being 4-3. Now, they're not. And that's the mark of good teams, and they've played a good schedule. But you know who I think's been the most impressive team this year? And this is going to absolutely stun the listeners. Michigan. They have looked as consistent as anybody. Now, I don't think they have the high-end talent when it comes to playoff time to beat Georgia. You know, because at the end of the day, I think that's who you're going to have to beat is Georgia. That Tennessee defense scares me to death. I think they can score with anybody, but they got to be able to stop somebody. It was interesting. I saw a stat on Alabama. So the numbers for Bryce Young are not that much different than they were last year. The difference is he went almost 100 less plays. They just aren't able to control the football the way they've done in the past, which means they're not running the football as well, which means it's not opening up the gigantic plays down the field. He's only thrown for like 40 or 50 less yards than he did at this point last year. But, boy, it doesn't feel like it. I mean, they don't remotely look like the same football team. So it's fascinating to see, and it's clear that Alabama defense is not as good as it's been in the past. They can do things to expose them. So at the end of the day, for you, I think it's a mixed bag. Somebody's going to have to beat Georgia for me to get on board with that. They're going to beat them. Those guys feel like they feel like a young football team that's really talented, who's got the ability to just raise it up a level or two when they need to.
Next weekend is going to be fascinating. You've got the 2:30 game is going to be Tennessee, Georgia, and then the night game is going to be LSU, Alabama in Baton Rouge. I will be at that game. And that game means more than we thought it was going to mean a few weeks ago. Because LSU,
no doubt.
LSU's getting right. And the one thing I'll say, I've watched Ohio State play probably every game. With Jackson, I don't know what they're doing with Jackson Smith Enigma with his hamstring, because they don't have Marvin Harrison Jr. is great, but he can't blow the top off of defense. They don't have a level of explosion that they're used to. And when you're talking about Bama, that's the same thing. They don't have that level of explosion that we've been used to seeing from those guys. The only explosive offense I've seen this season thus far is Tennessee. And by that, I mean just big chunk plays. I think they're averaging 8 yards per pass attempt. Michigan, to me, is still one of the – and you hit the nail on the head. I mean, when I bet them a few weeks ago at 25-1, I just took it as a flyer so I could hedge it off of Ohio State. But to me, I think if you go watch them play, they'll grind you down, and they've got two NFL running backs in that team that just are workers and get it done. There's hardly anybody in the country, if you're not a Michigan fan, could tell you somebody's name on Michigan's team other than J.J. McCarthy. And they're going to quietly sneak into the Ohio State game, being 11-0, and that game's going to be on big-time TV, and they win that game. I mean, the Big Ten West is a fucking disaster. I mean, there's a chance if it ties out. There's a chance if it. I read this week. If the Big Ten, if they have a tie on one side and all the teams are equal, it's just a random draw to see who goes into the conference championship at that point. And so, I mean, it's a mess. Over there.
You're lying.
I swear to God, I read that.
Are
this
you
week.
Serious?
I'll find it and send it to you. It's crazy, but you know. And then you got Bert Bielema, who could be undefeated if he doesn't get jobbed on that call against Indiana in week two. Bert Bielema is undefeated. I mean, what a hell of a job that guy's doing. So yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic season. It's going crazy, but I don't know. I have no
TCU,
idea.
TCU they keep finding ways to win. Like every week, I think they're going to lose, and then boom, they find a way to win. And you know, the thing is teams like that. Because look, Dykes is cocky, and he's arrogant, and you know, teams like that kind of get on a roll, and they start to get that swagger. Now, candidly, I think it ends Saturday, but that's a whole nother story. Or, you know, but we'll, you know, we're going to get a chance to find out. I don't know if they come out of Morgantown. That's such a crazy place to play. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. They keep finding a way to battle back. How would you like to be the athletic director at Texas A&M and Michigan State right now? You owe those dudes gigantic. It's over $80 million they owe Jimbo. And y'all, it's 50-50. He's coaching next year.
I don't think so. I think he pulls it out. Now,
He loses Saturday and loses to LSU.
Yeah.
And I think his ass is gone because that signing class is falling apart. Dude, they just suspended four dudes from that class for smoking pot in the locker room before the game.
You got to relax, bro. You got to relax. You can't be scared.
Are you kidding me?
You can't be scared to take
this. And then my favorite part, did y'all read the responses in the Twitter? Nick Fitzgerald's like, yeah, you'd be surprised how much that goes on. Well, now we know what was wrong with Moorhead. Now we know how that deal was. How many guys you think are smoking pot and Kirby and Nick Saban's locker room? Probably not very many guys.
Before the game. I mean, I might smoke it after the game, but before the game, I don't know.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't
know. Before the game.
I don't know how many people that listen to this podcast have ever tried marijuana, but just a heads up, it does not make you faster. There is nothing you are doing faster after you've been smoking some weed. There's a reason Dwight Gooden and Daryl Strawberry were on cocaine and not marijuana, because – you know, it's like when
now we have a gigantic explanation on why the hell LSU takes that kick off. Did you see the statistics from that A&M South Carolina game? Like, you look at them and you look at that box score, you're like, okay, I know they ran the opening kickoff back. How the shit did they score every other point? A&M dominated that game statistically, but just kept finding ways to lose. They are a poorly coached football team. They're undisciplined. He's living in 1980, and they owe that dude $80 million. And, oh, let's not forget about my man Mel Tucker, who is very likely to have a losing season this year. And if he does, as a head coach, he's going to have had a losing season 3 out of 4 years, and that dude's making $9 million. I'm telling you, Mark, the worst decision I ever made in my life was not going into coaching. There's no chance that I couldn't have talked some dipshit alum, some athletic director, into giving me a head coaching job in the Power Five by now.
Well, I've already
zero chance.
Yeah, I've already told you, if it wasn't for my father screaming at me, that, you know, I would have gone into coaching and I probably would have done it. But Scott, I mean, you own a business. Can I come to work for you and be your GM? And will you pay me $9 million and we will lose money next year? Because if you will, I'd like to come to work for you tomorrow.
Yeah, right? Man, that'd be a great gig, wouldn't it?
Oh, and by the way,
it is.
If you fire me,
it's unbelievable.
If you fire me, you also owe me $80 million. Just letting you know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I've got to run this deal for 10 years. I got to run this deal for 9 more years. And I'm going to be really bad at my job, but you got to pay me for all 9, like it or lump it, because I'm an idiot. I mean, it is. And then everybody's like, oh, they're not going to fire Jimbo. Oh, that's too much money. They're freaking, what do they have, $9 billion or something like that in their
endowment? In their deal? Trust,
yeah. Are you in their endowment? Are you kidding me? Oh. I mean, dude, for every Mississippi State alumni that's worth $1 million, they got an equal number that's worth 30. Because the oil wells and all of that.
Well,
zero chance they won't fire him if they don't. They will come up with the money if they want to get rid of him. And candidly, they probably need to, because this ain't going to get better.
And for some of y'all that don't know, that don't live in Texas, when you drill for oil in Texas or natural gas, a lot of the property is called university lands. And when you drill on university lands, that gets paid out to the state to go to the universities. And it goes, number one, to the University of Texas. And I think they get a 50% shake. I think A&M gets like a 24% shake, and I think Texas Tech gets a 10% shake. Nobody else gets any because it just goes into a general slush fund that the state uses to fund schooling on this. So those schools
have plenty of money. Well, and everybody doesn't realize, like, when you see these gigantic football stadiums out here, they don't know that. And they're like, whoa, this school, boy, they're spending $30 million on a football stadium, this high school in the middle of nowhere. Mm. I'll tell you why, because they got a bunch of damn oil money, and they got nothing else to do. Yeah. Might as well build it.
Andrews, Texas, nicest stadium I played in back in the 90s, and there's not 45,000 people that live there. They had a great golf course, great golf course, great baseball stadium, great football stadium, and they were terrible. But it was fantastic, and we played it all the time.
Greatest example of money running out of your ears ever, and we can get to the podcast. Van, Texas. I'm fairly certain that no one not from Van or East Texas has any damn clue where Van, Texas is, but it is near Tyler. That'd be the biggest town that it's close to. And Sky Ranch is a big Christian camp where lots of people in North Texas send their kids. It's in Van. You are rolling through Van, Texas on the way to Sky Ranch, and there's a gigantic football stadium. Baseball stadium equally as nice, right on the same property. You lay eyes on 6 oil wells on school grounds. There's 4,500 people in the town. I shit you not, I guarantee you that's a $10, $15 million stadium. In Van, Texas. It's not like they're building at the same cost as, you know, at the same cost as Allen or, you know, Frisco or whoever. It's in the middle of damn nowhere. I guarantee you there's nobody in a 4,500-person town in America that's got a stadium like that. Dude, you should see in the end zone the dressing room. It's just incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Oil wells. Look, there's a great statement somebody told me one time, and I think T. Boone Pickens is the guy who made this statement famous. If you don't have an oil well, get one. There's no better advice in the world. Don't listen to the green morons. Ain't going to get you out of it. If you don't have an oil well, get one.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Anyway, college football, it's been good. Last week we were 4-3. The South Carolina game bit me in the ass. I didn't see that coming. I thought K-State was going to get TCU right up until their second-string quarterback got hurt. And after they had to make the adjustment to Will Allen, they were pretty inept. But TCU got it again. Good for those guys. I mean, the Big 12 is all over the map. The Pac-12 is interesting to me because you think if USC goes undefeated and wins out, that they have a chance to play in the college football playoff, because they're going to have – I can't imagine if Oregon wins it, there's no way they're going to put Oregon in, having already played Georgia and gotten boat raced like that.
Gotten boat raced. There's no chance I think Pac-12's out because SC's lost, even though it was a good loss. They're the only team that's got a chance, and they've got to be really impressed the rest of the way, in my opinion. I think that just looks like a flawed team. And their biggest problem is you're going to have Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson, Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee likely with at least four of those teams are going to have equal or better records than they do. I don't think there's any chance. Oh, and TCU. TCU's still got a chance to only lose one game, too. So you mix in those guys, I think they're on the outside looking in, regardless of what they do. How about people talking about my man Bo Nix being a Heisman candidate? Did you watch the first game of the year? It really tells me, because this is what I keep thinking, because it's not like Georgia's not flawed. I mean, they got the dog shit beat out of them. I mean, so bad that I think I said this on the second podcast that my buddies that are Oregon fans that went to the game said the Georgia fans felt bad for them. They were buying them beer at the Dome, which is so fabulous. Because what made it better, the Georgia fans felt bad for us. They were all buying us beer. And I just died laughing, thought it was hilarious. But they got destroyed. But yet he is playing significantly better. And at the end of the day, I think it just goes to what we always say, and you can apply this to the NFL. It's about coaching. I mean, look, last year was a totally wasted year for Trevor Lawrence because he had no coaching. He finally has a coach. You're seeing some glimpses of him being the player they thought he might could be. But, I mean, at the end of the year, he's still a rookie because last year was just a waste. Yeah. And I think coaching matters, and he's getting better coaching than he's had. That's the bottom line.
Speaking of coaching, what is Dabo doing? You had to pull DJ Uiagalelei last week. Cade comes in, secures the win for Clemson. And then the first thing Dabo says when he comes off the, you know, he's not even off the field yet. He's in the tunnel talking about DJ is still our quarterback. You know, we had to get some things right this week. We've got to get some things right. DJ is still our quarterback. Come on, man. I mean,
they lose that game if they leave DJ in there.
I guarantee they lose that game if they leave him in there.
And they lose it.
And the thing is, they're going into the bye this week, and then they're coming out. I think they got Notre Dame next week. But it's like, look, man, you got to start putting this kid in the game. It's like DJ, I'm not saying he – I mean, you've talked about it. You've called me, and I've bet on him, but I'm not a giant DJ fan. I just don't think he's that good. And it's not that I don't think he has the physical talent to be that good. He just does not look confident running the offense to me. Like, you watch – Quinn Ewers.
He's indecisive.
You watch Quinn Ewers, who hadn't played football in 2 years, and you watch him run Texas's offense against Alabama, and then when he comes against Oklahoma, that guy looks like he's in complete control of everything that's going on that field, right? And that kid hadn't hardly played ball in 2 years. You know, I mean, DJ has played for 3.5 years now, and he still does not look like he's comfortable in that backfield. And so if Clemson goes undefeated, I mean, they're completely fugazi, but if Clemson goes undefeated – and they get into the college football playoffs somehow, I just cannot imagine that they just don't get straight-ass boat raced in that game because their defense is not as good as it has been in years past. And offensively, they have very little explosion with DJ playing back there. And I don't know if it's the receivers can't get the separation or if they're just not confident he can get the ball to them. And so they're trying to kind of cuddle him up and take care of him. But either way, it's like that team's not that good. And so I'm very underwhelmed with Clemson and DJ. And if Dabo keeps bringing him back out after the bye and having Cade getting some reps in there now, I don't know what he's doing because he should be putting Cade in there. Just like Jimbo should be putting Connor Wegman in there at A&M this weekend and being like, hey, we're trying to build to the future and letting some folks get some hope in there. But I don't know what he's doing either, so – I'm confused with all these coaches at this point.
Well, last week, A&M puts Wegman in, and they leave him in the pocket. I mean, it was crazy. They leave him in the pocket, and it's just, I mean, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, this kid's an athlete. Let this kid run. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. What are you doing leaving him in the pocket? I mean, it's just interesting all around. There's a lot of bad coaching, and there's a lot of guys that are so set in their ways. And it's one of the things I think has made Saban great, because we've talked about this multiple times, that he really changed what he was trying to do on offense and accepted where the game was. there's so many guys, and Jimbo's one of these guys. He is stuck in his ways, and he can't get out of it. He won't release it. And the game, it feels like the game's passing that guy by because they are not untalented.
No.
I mean, that is, there's a reason all those freshmen can't get on the field. It's because there's dudes in front of them with talent. I mean, it's not like A&M's been finishing 40th in recruiting for the last 4 years, and then they just showed up. I mean, those dudes have had three top 10 recruiting classes. I mean, this is still a talented football team, and they don't look it. So, anyway, there's a lot of strange things going on. I agree with you. Ungulele just does not look – he doesn't look confident to me. He looks slow, and he just looks indecisive. And look, man, there's some kids like Quinn Ewers is a great example. Hell, he looks totally in control. He lets it rip. He makes a mistake. He comes right back out the next play and lets it rip again.
Yeah.
And you can call it arrogance. You can call it whatever. But, man, that's what it takes to play quarterback. Yeah. You got to believe you're the dude. And when 80,000 people think you aren't the dude, you still got to believe you're the dude. And that and that's a very limited number of guys that can do it. The guy is super talented. He's a huge kid, and he's got a big arm.
Oh, huge.
I mean, he does not look like they can go to the next level. And I say all that, and they're undefeated. I mean, that's the – and I think that, at the end of the day, is what Dabo's looking at. But and I think he's trying – I think he sees something in Ungulele because he's clearly not scared to pull his quarterback. I mean, he pulled the – what was the kid that transferred
Kelly out of
Missouri? Yeah. That, and he rolls in Lawrence right or right. So he's clearly not scared to do it. It's just there's something – that's keeping him doing it. And look, at the end of the day, they're undefeated. And I think that may be it. So, anyway, let's get to gambling. Enough about last week.
Let's get to gambling. Scott, I have one shameless plug. I told you how to do it. We don't take advertising dollars on this show, but I got two friends running for township here in my hometown, The Woodlands, Texas, Brad Bailey and Kyle Watson. If you get out there, go out and vote. Vote for my buddies. They're fans of the podcast. They've been listening to us for years. They pushed some other listeners onto us. If they're going to run for unpaid office and put themselves through that, then we will endorse them here on this show. So, with that being said, Scott.
I will endorse them, and I no longer live in the Woodlands. And the reason I will endorse them is because they're 100% damn right. You do not want any part of this township. So, anyway, if you're listening, you're in the Woodlands, you need to vote for both those guys that are on the right side of the shake of this deal. Because let me tell you, unless you want to be part of Houston, you need to stay as you are.
43, 36, and 3, Scott. That's what I've got us at. I've got us popping a couple of those Moneyline Underdog parlays. Maybe we can get a new one this week. But with that being said, that's all history, man. You got to start over every week. First game I want to go to, game 105-106. University of Louisiana Lafayette is playing Southern Miss. This game opened up with Lafayette laying 2 with the over-under being 45. Over-under number has slipped down to 43. And Lafayette is currently laying 1. Scotty, when we looked at this team going into the season, I actually was a big USM fan because we talked about how they had all the coaching changes. They spent half of last year running the Wildcat with Frank Gore Jr. back there. Ooh La La, I think, is living off a lot of the past. This team does not strike me as good. And you know what? Southern Miss and Ooh La La are not that far apart. What are we going to get in this Thursday night matchup when they come in?
Well, I like the Buzzards here. And for everybody listening for the first time, that's what all of us in Mississippi affectionately call the Eagles, the Golden Eagles of Southern Miss. I just like them here. Look, their turnover ratio has been abysmal, and that is the key. That's what they got to keep in line. And I think defensively, they're really playing good football, really doing a good job stopping the run. And look, that's what you got to do to stop this Lafayette offense. They're not going to come out and just gash you throwing the football all over the field. This team needs to stop the run, and they need to not turn the football over. Home field advantage, I think, is going to be a big deal here for Southern Miss. This team's finally kind of turning the corner a little bit, 4-3. And they're 5-2. Both these teams are 5-2 against the spread. But at the end of the day, Southern is a team, and people forget this, but in the 80s, late 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, they had 20 straight winning seasons. This is a team that was as good as you could get at the Power 5 level under Jeff Bauer. and it's spun off. I think that carried up to 7 or 8, something like that. And then it's kind of gone sideways for whatever reason. They wanted to fire Bauer, and it's just kind of spun off in the weeds after that. This is a good program. I like Southern Miss here. I'm with you. I think Lafayette is living off of a previous coaching staff. While this is still a pretty good football team, it's not a great football team, and this is a team that has lost some games. They definitely should have won, but got a big win last week. I think they go on the road, and I think they lose to Southern Miss on a Thursday night. And I love, you know, I love Thursday night home dogs. No doubt about that. But at the end of the day, I think that's the difference for the Buzzards here.
Next game I want to go to, Scott, is a Northeastern matchup, Boston College and UConn. This is game 119-120 on your rotation sheet. This game opened up Boston College laying 9, over under 46.5. It's pretty much painted across the board now. Boston College laying 7.5, over unders at 44. This is an interesting matchup because these two teams, these kids know each other. And Boston College, to me, with Jurkovic, has not been great. They have not performed nearly as well as I thought they were. I actually thought this was a team that could get some upsets going in the ACC, and they haven't done that. And UConn's a team that nobody's really paying attention to. They're 3-5 straight up, but, Scotty, you know what they are? They're 6-2 against the number. And so you know what we're going to do here? UConn changed quarterbacks a couple weeks ago. Jim Mora Jr., he's getting some swag going in there. I mean, I guarantee you, how many times do you think he's told the kids at UConn, hey, you don't remember this, but we played in the fucking Fiesta Bowl. He's letting these kids know if they start believing we can get somewhere with this, 6-2 against the number. Give me the UConn Huskies in this game, bro. +7.5. I wanted the 9, but I didn't get there. +7.5. I think UConn gets it done here this week.
I think UConn gets it done, too. I will be honest with you. I will play this game on the money line. I think they got a legit chance to win this game. It's more about how inept I think Boston College has looked. 1-6 against the spread. And they're running for less than 70 yards a game.
It's embarrassing.
I mean, look, you can also say the same thing about Connecticut's offense. Mm-hmm. Hell, they're barely throwing for 100 yards a game. But it is these teams are flawed. It is what they are. But I just, at the end of the day, I mean, you look at statistically, these teams are identical. 7.5 is just too much. I think it's going to be a close ball game. I think it's a game Connecticut's got to win. You look statistically, this game should be closer than this. I think Connecticut being the home team, it's not like it's a huge home field advantage. That does matter. I think they've got a chance to be a live dog in this ball game, and I love them at 7.5.
Next game I want to go to, Scotty, is TCU West Virginia. That's game 131-132 on your rotation sheet. TCU opened up this game a 7.5-point favorite. It's pretty much painted across the board 7.5-8. Over-under opened up at 70.5. Now it's down to 69. These two teams are interesting, and since the TCU is undefeated, they're scoring 44 points a game. They're giving up 29. They're 7-0, 5-1-1 against the number, 5-2 to the over. West Virginia scoring 35 points a game, giving up 34. They're 3-4 straight up, 4-3 against the number, and they're 4-3 to the over. All right, Frogs, get ready to hate me, but I'm going Country Roads on this one. I've been a Frogs fan. We cashed our ticket, Scott, last week. I don't know if you remember this, but we had the Frogs over 6.5 wins for the season, and we cashed that ticket last week. And so if you had that ticket, congratulations, kudos to you. Put your little money in your pocket, take your wife to dinner, and have a good time. This TCU team, they are good, man. They're really good. West Virginia is just a super weird place to play. You're up there, settled up in the side of a mountain. TCU has been running all these big games in a row. It seems like every game they've got is a big game in a row. And I think this may be the one that gets them because I could see you looking past West Virginia to what's coming ahead of you. And I think this could get them right here. I'm going to go West Virginia Mountaineers +7.5 in this one.
Morgantown is a really – even when they're bad, like last, I mean, look, when Baylor went up, that stadium wasn't even full, Mark, and it was still rowdy. I mean, that's a rough place to play. You mix in, it's going to be, you know, around 40 degrees at game time. You know, those West Virginia boys are more used to playing in this. We've just got to hope that the QB Daniels just doesn't do something stupid. He's a pick six waiting to happen. And the thing is he's done it, and we've still gotten some covers. That's been the crazy part. Hell, that's what's kept them from winning a couple of games that they still covered. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think this is, again, just a touch too many points. They're riding high. Everybody's looking at that West Virginia pass defense versus that TCU offense. They're seeing 9.4 yards of an attempt for TCU versus giving up 8.6 for that West Virginia defense. I think it's going to be a score fest. Difference is, I think the TCU defense is bad enough that it's going to be able to keep West Virginia in this ballgame. Feel the same way here. Just think 7.5 is too much. This feels like a 7-point win, 3-point win, 4-point win. Not sure TCU is going to lose this ballgame, but I think that's too many points. This is much like the Pittsburgh game. I could see this game being a lot like that Pittsburgh game, and I think that's what we're going to get.
Moving on, Scotty, Ohio State, Penn State, one of the biggest games in the Big Ten calendar this year. Game 135-136, Ohio State came out laying 15, over-under was 61.5. Pretty much painted 15.5 across the board at this point with the over-under being 61. It's going to be an interesting game, brother. And when you start looking at these two teams, I mean, Ohio State scoring 49 points a game. They've given up 14. They're 7-0 straight up, 4-2 against the number, 5-2 shaded to the over. Penn State scoring 33 points a game. They're giving up 18. They're 6-1 straight up, 4-3 against the number, and 5-2 to the over. I mean, it would lead you to believe that we're going to get some points in this game based on looking at what's going on. But Ohio State, other than Notre Dame, really hasn't played anybody all season. And when you watch them play, you're trying to figure out what's the offense going to do because they have got athletes everywhere. C.J. Stroud's incredible. Both the running backs are incredible. The wide receiver core is all going to be in the NFL. But – and as explosive as they are, scoring 49 points a game, it's not like they have just blown people out. It's like they just grind you into a pulp, and you look back and you're like, oh, shit, we got our asses beat 55-10 or something like that. And it's interesting. And Penn State, on the flip side, their quarterback is 72 years old. And if I think what they're going to do, and Jim Knowles knows, is he's going to shut down the run and not let Singleton beat them at Penn State, and he's going to make Clifford come out and try to beat them. And I think that's not a formula that can work. Give me Ohio State to cover the number. I think they're going to boat race these guys at Beaver Stadium Saturday.
Yeah, here's the thing for me, and this is the deal for me. I think Clifford makes mistakes. I think this is the best, if it ain't the best defense coordinator in the Big Ten, he's certainly up there. I think the job he did, talked about this repeatedly at Oklahoma State, incredible. His ability to adjust and take things away is what I think is the reason we're going to cover this ball game. I can see this being a fairly close game at the half. I really can. I can see this being a 7-point game. I can see this being a 4-point game, you know, whatever. And then I think they make adjustments. And those in this ball game, they move on in the second half. Penn State is a flawed football team. Here's another guy with a gigantic contract that we can go into really, really not anywhere close to expectation. And I don't give a shit if you go 8-3, or I guess it'd be 9-3 in this league. If you're getting drilled by Penn State, Ohio State and Michigan every year, and you're at a Penn State, you're doing a piss poor job. That's the bottom line. You got to beat those teams, and they are not beating those teams. I think that continues on Saturday night. I know it's going to be a rowdy, or I guess Saturday morning. I know it's going to be a rowdy environment. I also think that 11 a.m. game helps them significantly. I think it benefits the Buckeyes. Say what you want, but getting zoosed up all day long makes it a louder, rowdier place. That is the bottom line. And I think the Buckeyes are a better football team. But I think this is also an indictment as much of Penn State and the lack of big playability from their quarterback.
Next game I want to go to, Scotty, we're going to stay in the Big Ten. Michigan State, Michigan. It's cross-state rivals, not cross-town. But 7:30 p.m. is when this game's kicking off. This game 144 or 141.
You're not really far from cross-town either. It really ain't that far.
No, it's not. If you've never been to the state of Michigan and you don't realize how close Ann Arbor and East Lansing are, they're not very far apart. This game opened up, over-under was a 54. It's painted across 55, pretty much across board. Michigan opened up at 21, 21.5. It's now up to 23. Michigan State scoring 27 points, giving up 27. They're 3-4 straight up, 3-4 against the number. Michigan is scoring 42 points a game, giving up 12. They're 7-0 straight up, 4-3 against the number, 1-5 to the under. Here's where I'm going on this one, brother. I think you and I are on the same page. This is a big number for Michigan to lay, but this is a rivalry for these two teams. And I know a lot of times you say, hey, it's a rivalry, throw the spread out the window, anything can happen, blah, blah, blah. I've watched Michigan State play several times because I have had money on those guys on the side. This is not a very good football team. The quarterback, I think, actually may be banged up, Peyton Thorne. I'm not sure if he's even going to play. He's on the injury list. They don't have Kenneth Walker. And if you don't realize how good that guy is, he may be the NFL rookie, offensive rookie of the year this year. They don't have him. Michigan, to me, you know what they remind me of? They remind me of those old Frank Beamer Virginia Tech teams. Like hard hat, lunch pail, show up for work, and just get the job done. Their best receiver, probably Ronnie Bell, has only got one touchdown catch for the season. And, you know, he's coming back off an injury from last year. I mean, that's what it reminds me of. It's just grind you up, beat you up, be physical. Like I said, there's no superstars. You're not hearing all these names and everything else. And we haven't heard a whole lot about khaki pants. I mean, motherfucker's 7-0, and no one's talking about Jim Harbaugh this season. It's crazy. I'm taking Michigan in this rivalry. I think they're going to beat the dog out of Sparty on Saturday.
Well, they lost 49-20 to Ohio State at home. They lost 34-7 to Minnesota at home. They've actually been a better team on the road than they've been at home. And at the end of the day, and I know they got that win against Whiskey. They got Chris fired, but at the end of the day, this is not a good football team. This feels like a safe number. They're gonna need another block punt to cover. They ain't winning this football game. That's the bottom line. I think this game's over. I think it's blowout city. I think Harbaugh does have those guys rolling. There are some statistics that just set up awfully. I mean, they can't run the football at all. Talking about Michigan State, can't run it at all. And you're just not going to beat good football teams that are balanced. They're going to make them one-dimensional. This Michigan offense is extremely balanced. The run sets up the pass. You got a defense giving up 4 yards a carry. They're giving up gigantic gash plays. They're not giving up tons of yards on Michigan State. What they're giving up is big gash plays, 8.2 yards per attempt. Man, that is bad when you got a team rolling in that is really, really balanced. It's going to try to hit you when you're off balance. They try to catch you in man-to-man situations. I just think Michigan gas cans these guys.
And I do too. And that's the reason. If this was not a rivalry game, I might pass on this game. But this being Michigan State, they get the chance to beat the dog out of those guys. They're going to beat the dog out of those guys. And so
I'm dog rolling, out of these guys.
Yeah, I'm rolling with it. Scotty, let's go to the American Conference, something nobody talks about anymore. Game 146 is where I want to go. UCF in Cincinnati. This is going to be a game that you want to have to watch. It's at 2:30 in the afternoon. It's actually going to be a great game. Cincinnati's rolling down to Orlando. They're going to be in the bounce house. Over-under here is at 56, opened up at 55. UCF is -1. Cincinnati was actually favored when this line opened up, and so it shifted a little bit. Cincinnati's scoring 37 points a game. They're getting up 22. They're 6-1 straight up. They're 2-4 against the number. UCF scoring 37 points a game, getting up 17. They're 5-2 straight up, and they're 4-3 against the number. This is an interesting game to me because you've got two coaches that come into this one that I think are both good coaches. Luke Fickell, I think, is on his way up still. He may have missed his opportunity, as we talked about a few weeks ago, and be at Cincinnati for life. I don't know. And then you got Gus Malzahn, who was at Auburn and just wasn't good enough to be at Auburn. But I don't know that anybody's good enough to be at Auburn. And they toss him out, and he picks up this UCF team. He picks up a guy that's playing quarterback for him that was the stolen base leader for in the SEC, and now he's the quarterback at UCF in Rhys Plumlee. And I think he's actually got a pretty good squad down there. This Cincinnati squad looks flawed to me. Like last week against SMU, I thought they were going to be able to put those guys away. I bet them hard. I thought they're going to crush these guys, and they just could not put SMU away. And made my head scratch a little bit. This UCF team, I think they're rolling a little bit. I think they finally have figured out that they need to run their offense a little bit more. Like when Nick was there, what was the quarterback's name at Auburn? Nick.
Nick. I want to say Fitzgerald. That's no, obviously Mississippi State. Marshall. Nick Marshall.
When Nick Marshall was there, that offense has started to look more like when Nick Marshall was at Auburn and what he's doing here. I like UCF laying one in the bounce house to get this done at home Saturday at 2:30.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm gonna go stats on you, as I I'm prone to do, but this ball game for me is about UCF, how balanced they are, and I think the quarterback's ability to run, because Cincinnati's really good in run defense, but a quarterback who's athletic and can get out and go makes a huge difference, and I think that gives us an advantage. But there's a couple of stats for you. As we roll into this ball game, favorite 5-2 to spread their last seven. Home team 4-0 against the spread. And look, this game for the last 7-8 years has been for this conference championship.
Absolutely.
These are the two heavyweights in this league, and they are used to going at it. So you're getting everybody's best shot. I'll give you one other good stat. Bearcats are 0-4-1 against the spread of their last 5 road games. Give me the Knights. I think they figured out how to get on.
I like it, man. We're going down to the bounce house. You know what? They're going to be in the Big 12 next year, and the best thing for me is that my kids will be out of high school and off to college, and so they will not ask me if we can go to the Baylor game there and go to Disney World at the same time. I mean, it's going to save me thousands of dollars from UCF just coming in this next year, because we're way past that at this point. Oh, Scotty, game I want to go to. Game 183. Let's slide all the way down the board.
I want to know, before we move on to the next board, what the over-under of beers consumed would be for Mark Atnip at a day at Disney World on a Saturday during college football when you couldn't watch college football. I want to know how many beers you think you would consume that day.
Man, that's tough. I've
been. If you were having to miss football, there's no way it doesn't go double figures all day.
Yeah,
Disney World's a big day.
Yeah, I've blacked out around my kids a couple of times, and so I wouldn't be scared to do it. Getting on the Avatar ride. I'll tell you this story one time. This is funny. When we were younger, we were having a party, and it was A&M versus Texas Tech. And my wife went to Texas Tech. We had all these people over, and they were all younger than us. And so, I cooked a big spread. Bought a ton of beer. I was drinking Colorado Bulldogs like 8:30, and I assumed the party would end at like 3 or 4 o'clock, because that's when the game was over at this point. They would all leave, and they didn't leave, and they stayed all night. My wife ordered pizza, and I woke up in my bedroom with a piece of pizza resting against my face, and nobody was here. And I woke up and I asked Amy why there was pizza on my face. And she told me that my daughter put it there because she thought I might be hungry when I got done taking a nap. So don't tell me I don't give y'all some raw shit on here, because that's real deal right there. Oh, man.
I love it.
Next game I want to go to, Scotty, this is an interesting one. Let's go to College Station, Texas. Ole Miss is coming in to play Texas A&M. Over-under in this one's 56. Texas A&M is getting 2 at home. Ole Miss is scoring 38 points a game. They're giving up about 20. They're 7-1 straight up, 3-5 against number 4-4 to the under. 4-4 to the over-under. It's amazing that we've won these so many unders with these guys. Texas A&M scoring 22 points a game. That's so laughable. Giving up 20. They're 3-4 straight up, 3-4 against the number, and 2-5 to the under. This is an interesting game. It's got a lot going on here. I love the Lane train. We've talked about this. My brother went to Ole Miss, so I kind of root for him a little bit. But I frankly think he's a good coach. I think he's adjusted everything he has to try to make the best product he can put on the field every week. Jimbo, I'm not so sure about. But, Scotty, it's an SEC game. What are we going to do?
Well, I'm going to say two things. My man Lane Kiffin today in the – I think it was a press conference – making the comment that He did everything he could try to do to keep DJ Durkin as his defensive coordinator, but that, as a lot of people have, they've gotten outbid when it comes to A&M. Just couldn't resist taking a shot, and instantly it shows up on a text chain with some friends. I'm like, he clearly thinks they're going to win. He doesn't talk a bunch of gibberish if he doesn't think he's going to win, and that was a clear shot across the bow. This game for me boils down to one thing, and you can go back and dig into this, and I didn't dig up the stats because honestly I've done it about 3 years in a row. When you get into 9 straight football games and that 9th game is on the road, there's about a 25% cover percentage. But there's about a 25% cover percentage. 8 games is really hard to play at this level. When you haven't had an off week at all for the whole season, man, it starts grinding on you. You look at that Ole Miss injury report, and it looks like, oh, they've played 8 weeks and haven't had an off week. And here comes a road game. They lost in a very similar situation to Arkansas a few years ago after they beat Bama and had a chance. And that game was at home to a team they were significantly better than. That was the crazy-ass throwback and all of that play in the Arkansas-Ole Miss game. I think that may be exactly what you get. I'm riding A&M in this ball game simply based on the no-off week, and Jimbo has to win this game.
Agree with you. I mean,
this is a rally the troops kind of game. I'm telling you, he loses this and loses to LSU, they're going to fire him.
It's going to be awesome, but either way. But
Marcus' only good year is COVID.
I agree. And that's what got him his contract.
I mean, that's his only good year. That's what got him that extension on that gigantic contract. And let's face it, that year was as fucked up as an upside down tackle box. I mean, nothing. Nobody should be judged off of that. Oh, and guess who else got all big contract that year? Mel Tucker.
How much money do you think Jimmy Sexton has made in the last 10 years off of just rallying all these athletic directors against each other to give these guys pay raises?
I don't know, but I will tell you, if you want to get me on a good rant for about an hour, I could do a podcast on everything I think Jimmy Sexton's done that's ruined college football. A lot of people – look, if you're a guy, and I said all along, how long is it going to take Dan Mullen figure out he needs to go to work for Jimmy Sexton? He couldn't get a job at State. Was applying for every job. He hired Sexton. He's gone a year later. I mean, he gets a Florida job. That's just who the guy's great at his job. As soon as shot at him individually, I think he is single-handedly ruining college football. And I just don't even think it's close. Off air, I can give you multiple reasons I think that. I know that Paul Feinbaum thinks very much what I think about, and I think him writing a book about it has been talked about alleged by the powers that be. But at the end of the day, this NIL mess is what it is because of coaches' salaries.
I think that's the bottom line. I think you may be right. Jimmy Sexton, if you don't know who he is, he's the agent that runs pretty much all the SEC, ACC, and he's picking up coaches around the country.
If I was a coach, Jimmy Sexton would be my agent. Just FYI, I don't mean that to sound unbiased. I don't like what's going on. I think he's fabulous at his job, but I think he's ruining the game of college football.
If he signs your coach, just a heads up, it's going to either cost you a lot of money or he won't be there in a year or so.
Or he's gone. That's right.
Let's go to Lubbock, Texas, Saturday night. My Baylor Bears are going to be playing Texas Tech. I will be at this game. Scotty, this is Parents Weekend for Texas Tech, so I'll be there to support my daughter. Over under 62 and a half.
Right, so what are you going – who are you cheering for? Are you going green and gold, or what are you doing?
I'm going green and gold, man. I think I'm going to – I mean, I have a degree from Baylor University, which not only gets you, you know, a degree, but a ticket to heaven, man. And so I can't deny that. And so I'm going green and gold in this one.
For everybody that does not know, Amy, Mark's wife, is a Tech grad.
Yes.
And so, anyway, this will be a fun weekend. And the bulk of our friends when we were in Houston together – our Tech guys. Yes. And I know tons of Tech people up here too. So anyway, this will probably be a very interesting weekend for that.
It'll be great. And all my family are Tech people. My daughter's at Tech, but I will have on some green and gold. I might sprinkle a little black in my hair. You never know, just to cover up the gray. But anyway, Let's get to this one. Baylor, Texas Tech. This game is 181, 182 on your rotation sheet. Over under 62.5. Texas Tech laying 2.5. Baylor scoring 37 points a game, giving up 24. They're 4-3 straight up. They're 4-3 the number, and they're 5-2 to the over. Texas Tech scoring 36 points a game, giving up 27. They're 4-3 straight up, 4-3 the number, and they're 5-2 to the over. Let me tell you where I'm going in this game, and this is why it's going to be good for me. I'm taking the over. Texas Tech changed quarterback a couple of times. They started the season with Tyler Shuck, the kid that transferred in from Oregon. He got banged up. They brought in Donovan Smith. Big kid. Looks like he's got a lot of talent. But I never felt like he was comfortable running the offense. It was taking him a little bit too long. They got the new offensive coordinator in there at Wes Kittley. He was the guy from that coached Bailey Zappe. If you watch any NFL, you saw Bailey Zappe come in for the Patriots in the last few weeks and get some wins. But he likes quick decisions and throw it. Donovan Smith wasn't there. He got a little hurt. They bring in Morton, redshirt freshman. This was the highest-rated quarterback Tech's brought in a long time. And he's got some wheels. And this kid came in, and he looks like he's making it work. And it looks good. I like what he's doing. Baylor, on the other hand, comes in here. I thought the defense was going to be the strongest part of this team. It's not. The defensive line's pretty good, but they're weak in the back end of this team. And Baylor's offense is hit or miss. But Shapen can get things rolling, and they got some guys that can create some explosion on this team. I'm going 62.5. I'm taking the over. There's not supposed to be any wind at this game. We're going to be in Lubbock, Texas. Give me the over in Texas Tech Baylor. That's where we're going.
Over's 5-2 last seven times they've gone to Tech. So that is something to keep in mind. Bears last four games overall are over ball games. Tech, that at the end of the day, they are a team. They're 5-2 against their last seven games for the over. I mean, at the end of the day, these teams want to get it. They want to get it out there. I don't think that Baylor defense is as good as it's been. There are plays to be had against those guys. And so it is going to be interesting what gets out there. You mentioned the offense coordinator. They want to run. They want to fling it around the yard. They want to get it up and down the field. Bottom line is, I don't think this number is big enough, and I think we're going over. I really like this line at 62.5. Both these teams are averaging almost 40 points a game scoring. So well into the upper 30s. So, yes, this feels like a number that they're going to hit. They're also giving up well into the upper 20s as well on the defensive side of the football. So, yep, I like the over here, like this ball game.
Since they put Morton in, Texas Tech's been snapping the ball 18 seconds a play is what they're averaging. I mean, they are speeding up the offense, and I think it's going to cause problems for Baylor's defense. And once Baylor gets behind, they're going to have to start going at it. Shapen's, he's got a pick six in him, I'm telling you. So we'll see. We're going to go over on this one. Scotty, next game I want to go to. Cocktail party, brother. You know they're trying to – they're moving this out of Jacksonville is what they're talking about at this point.
I know.
I don't know how –
Jacksonville is kind of a dump. I hate that they're thinking about doing it. But, just because I need to go to Jacksonville before they move this game out. This is a game I got to go to.
And I agree. I think we may have to be there next year. Because
I think next year is my year.
If they move it, there's no way they're going to call it the cocktail party after that. And so you have to say that you've been to the cocktail party at least once, especially if you're not a fan of these teams. But I want to go anyway. Florida, Georgia, interesting game, huge rivalry game. They play it in Jacksonville. If you're not familiar with it, this is game 181, 182 on your rotation sheet. Florida comes into this game. The over-under is 56.5. Georgia's laying a giant number, 22.5. Florida's scoring 31 points a game. They're giving up 28. They're 4-3. They're 3-4 to the 3-4 to the spread, and they're 4-3 to the over. Georgia's coming here scoring 41 points a game. They're giving up 9. They're 7-0 straight up. 4-3 against the number, and they're 1-6 to the under. Sorry, I laughed when I got to them and I saw they're giving up 9. Scott. I mean, is this even a rivalry game anymore? What are we going to get in this thing?
No, candidly, it's really not. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel that way. I'm going contrarian here. You look at everything about this ball game, and it says under. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. I think Florida's going to be able to score enough points to push this game over. This defense is not going to stop Georgia. You're going to see Georgia that you saw against Oregon. They simply have not played aggressively very many times this year. And it, look, guess what their ass is going to do Saturday? You're going to get ball game A1 effort out of Georgia. I think you're also going to get it out of Gators. And Richardson is an explosive athlete.
You think they're going to let him run? They haven't let him run all season.
I think they have to just because, look, at the end of the day, the Steels in danger going off the skids for him. They're losing some ball games. And I think they can go get gas canned. I think they got to figure out a way to get him up the field. They kind of turned him loose a little bit against Tennessee. And I feel like that happens on Saturday. I think they score enough to get this ball game over. But at the end of the day, what I think is Georgia scores 40 against an average Florida defense. And I think this gets me, I think this is a 45-21 kind of game. That's what I see coming. I think there's enough points here to get us over. If we can just – look, we weren't wrong on that South Carolina-Georgia game. That game went under, but we were right. We knew South Carolina was just completely inept. I don't think Richardson is going to be that inept against them. He's going to be enough to get us over this number.
I think you're right. But actually, I think your score prediction is wrong. I think this game could end up 55-10. I think Georgia, if they want to, can come out and tight end beat their asses.
They're going to
grill them. Because they haven't played anybody. You're hearing a lot of yammer about – they got Tennessee next week. I know you're saying you don't want to show anything. You're way past that at this point. There may be some stuff they don't want to show. But, dude,
Can I just let you in? They got Florida this week. They got Tennessee next week. You know where they play in 3 weeks? Stark Vegas on the road. Been saying all year long. I'm telling you, I am on board with the Bulldogs in that ball game. They're going to cover that number. That game's going to be a lot closer than people think. Terrible spot again for Georgia coming into that football game. State, every home game has stumbled into just a bad opponent. They're going to beat Auburn. They got an off week this week. Auburn at home, they win. Then comes Georgia. It's either going to be a 2:30 or a night game, huge game. State gives them all they want. I don't think they win, but they keep close. They beat East Tennessee State or whoever. They go to Oxford, get the dog shit beat out of them. That's Mississippi State's schedule the rest of the year.
I almost can't stop laughing. You went full.
Because it is a terrible spot for the Georgia Bulldogs. Two gigantic
full
games.
Old Testament prophecy on me. Just rolling it out there. And that's some good stuff. But I kind of agree with you there. Oh, man. Scotty, that is the board that we got this week. It's big, much bigger than we got last. Is there any other games you want to talk about because you think they're interesting?
There are. There's a couple. Look, I will tell you, and I know you disagree with half of this line, I'm going to play UConn and Wazoo in a money line parlay. I think UConn is a live dog. I said I think they would. Wazoo, I think, has got a chance, but everything's got to break right for them. Utah's clearly the better football team. I'm not convinced UConn's not the better football team, and we're getting a half. The other game I like, I think Tennessee and Kentucky has got to be a chance to be closer than this score. They have basically played last 4 or 5 years to a one-score ball game. No, Tennessee went on the road and won last year. It was a better team. The ball game was in the 40s. I know that. The key here is can Rodriguez, they could not do last year, stop him at all. Can he run the football and keep the pressure off of Levis and all that? That Tennessee defense is suspect. My only concern is that late in the ball game, Tennessee could get a couple of big strikes, stretch this ball game out after Kentucky's kept it close. But I just think that number's too much. Those are the ball games that we haven't talked about that I'll be kind of keeping an eye on. The other game I like, kind of like me some Illinois, Nebraska under 50.5. Illinois hadn't let anybody score. Don't know how that flawed Nebraska offense is going to score enough on them. And hell, Illinois can't score on my sixth grade team. So I think this ball game goes low. I think that's a low scoring game too.
I agree with you on that one. Notre Dame, I think on the road this year is undefeated and they beat the spread every time. I like Notre Dame to come into Syracuse, get the win here. It's weird. It's like they go on the road, they get – I mean, it's like the old Phoenix Cardinals. It's like when they're on the road, they're better than they were at home. Notre Dame seems to be the same way this season. It's like they get away from South Bend and they're better. The line that stinks to me, I mean reeks of high heaven, is how in the world is the over-under in the Wake Forest-Louisville game 64?
No, I think it's down to 61, isn't 61. It? Hang on.
That line stinks so bad.
It's going down, too.
Yeah, I mean, that is the biggest reverse line move I have seen in a long – I mean, there's no way you can watch
these 64, two, it is yeah. at 64, okay. Yep. Down from 69.5.
There's no way you can watch these two teams play and think this game's going to be an under at 64. I mean, I will be shocked. Go look at VSiN. If you Google it, go to VSiN betting splits, and you can find it, and it'll show you the differences in tickets bet and money. I haven't looked, but that line, I mean, I would have bet the over in that, but it stinks so bad it doesn't make any sense to me. It's like they know something I don't know.
Yeah, I want to know how many tens of people that don't have a kid playing for Northwestern or Iowa are going to watch that football game Saturday.
Tens of people.
Do you know how shitty of a game that's going to be?
It's terrible. I think
the over-under opened at 31.5. 31.5. That is up to a whopping 37.5. 31.5. Hell, the service academies aren't even down there. No. That is atrocious. That's, I mean, just atrocious.
I think you're right. That's below an Army Navy over under that we, because I mean, we've bet some 36s, 34s.
Oh yeah,
I've never bet under a 30. I'm gonna take the over in that game. I'm just gonna let you know. I'm gonna take the over in that game. Because Spencer Petras is terrible. He'll probably throw a pick six and it'll go the other way. Iowa's terrible, man. If they
only other game I got for you that I'm gonna keep an eye on. I kind of got me some luck. North Texas impressed me last week. I was on the wrong end of that game. I thought UT San Antonio to be able to cover that number. It's the defense of North Texas that surprised me. And I think that's what the deal is. They're going on the road at Western Kentucky. I think they got a chance to stay within 10 in that ball game. That's a big underdog. North Texas, not that bad of a football team, playing better. By the way, before we get off, how about my boys at UTEP getting the W last week, favored again this week? You got to love it, baby. My boys at UTEP, Dana Dimmel, I missed them first week of the season against this same North Texas team because I was not sold on that North Texas team, and now they've kind of come around. But the boys in El Paso are getting it done.
That's amazing because you remember when he was at U of H, they ran him out of town on a rail because they couldn't get this
he
thing
He went
right.
winless yeah. when they hired him. Yeah. When they fired him, he was winless. I think he went 0-11, and then they hired Browse.
How big of an interview – good of an interviewer do you have to be when your last college job you did not win a single game and you're getting interviewed by a team that has not won a single game? You've got to be able to sell it like I can make this work.
Yep. And then and that team's already terrible. I mean, that's what the great part is. He had to go back to Kansas State and the Purple Wizard to get his resume back. I mean, it was interesting. So anyway, just find it. Find that interesting. So that's the games I got this week off the board.
Scott, Moneyline Parlay this week. You get to pick. Don't worry about me. Pick what you want.
Oh, no. My first pick would be UConn. There's no doubt. But my second one will be Wazoo. I know you don't love that game. So if you got another game, I know we both like UConn as a live dog. So underdog you've got, let's take that.
I can go with UConn and Wazoo. I think that's a good one right there. The only thing that worries me about Wazoo is actually played really well at home this year. I like the new coach, what he's doing up there. But, man, Utah has been so good on the road under Whittingham. And, I mean, he knows what he's doing. And so that was my only thing that I would say with that. But I'll go Wazoo UConn with you. We'll bet those two. It's about, what, seven, six?
7 and 7.5. So that's going to be
– it's going to be about it's going to be about 6.5 to 8 to 1 is where that's going to lie.
Yep.
Scotty, man, we are plowing through the college football season. We only got 4 or 5 weeks left.
Isn't it sad?
Oh, man.
Sucks.
You're going to miss it so bad.
Mark, we may have to go to the Vegas Bowl, though. We may have to swing down. That's the Saturday before Christmas.
It's December 17th, Scotty. It's December 17th. You know why I know that?
Yeah.
Because I have tickets to fly in because I am deeply hoping that my Baylor Bears are playing the Texas A&M Aggies in that game. And
oh, that would be awesome.
We'll be at Circa, and we'll go over the game. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, I'll tell you this. If they swing that, I'll figure out how to get out there.
Hey,
I can make that happen.
Random question, since we're a little short on time, but who do you think gets fired at the end of the season that we're not predicting gets fired?
Well, I think everybody thinks Jimbo Fisher's unfireable. And I think he loses Saturday because I think he is going to lose to LSU. I think he's fired. He gets fired.
If Jimbo gets fired, is Texas A&M the biggest job in the country available next year?
Probably. I would be fascinated to see who they hire. I mean, I can't imagine Lane Kiffin wouldn't take that job. Because, look, everybody knows, you know, my profound dislike for the Rebels. But his ass ain't leaving to go to many jobs. Because the Rebels will pay him. And everybody's, oh, he'll leave. He'll take the so-and-so job. I'm like, you're on crack rock. He's not leaving Oxford for that. I mean, it's a good job. They'll pay him money. He's winning. He's got a lot of things on board. Here's the deal. Mississippi's still got a lot of talent. And Mike Leach doesn't recruit very much of it. I mean, he's getting his pick of a state that is a really talented state putting out NFL guys. And so I'm not positive he leaves for many jobs. Texas A&M is one of them that he would leave. Like, I'll be candid with you. I don't know that he takes the Auburn job. They're going to have to give him a Jimbo Fisher-ish contract to get him to leave with all the dysfunction that's been there.
Oh, it's going to be interesting, Scott, once we get to silly season at the end of the year. Folks, that's the podcast. Scroll all the way down. Give us some reviews. Give us some ratings. He's Scott Denson 1. I'm at Nick Mark on Twitter. Try this up. I don't always respond. I'm so sorry. A couple of people sent me notes. And on Saturdays, I kind of turn off social media and my phone and just try to pay attention to what's going on. And give us some reviews. We always love that. Either way. That being said, we will see y'all next week. And hopefully we can make a few bucks from our bookies.